Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boy, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So, I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world, right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. Andy Murray, Stan Wawrinka, and Rafa Nadal have all advanced to the semifinals of the French Open. They will be joined by number 6 seed Dominic Thiem, who upset Novak Djokovic in straight sets. On the ladies' side, Karolina Pliskova and Simona Halep advanced to the semis, where they will face each other. The Seattle Mariners and Gene Segura have agreed to a 5-year, $70 million extension with a $17 million option for 2023. The shortstop is leading the American League with a .341 batting average. He is currently on the 10-day disabled list with a high ankle sprain. And Dennis Pitta was waived by the Baltimore Ravens after the tight end re-injured his hip. The move clears $2.5 million in cap space. Today we have Matt Reed, Stefan Filio, and Carlos Blackman. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
So let's get loud and let's get proud, 'cause we got a game to play.
Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward a feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in a fabulous Las Vegas. Always feeling fine, and going out to my buddy in Oakland, California, Matt Reed. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Clayton. Good to be here, both.
Good to talk to you. You know who else is feeling pretty good today?
Who would that be?
Hugh Jackson of my Cleveland Browns signed with Roc Nation. How good is that?
They're expanding the coaches now, huh?
Yeah, it is, because when I think hip-hop gangsta, I think Hugh Jackson.
100%.
Yeah, so good for him. He's going to be the first coach out there. You know who else is feeling pretty good?
Who else?
Scooter Jeanette.
Oh, that was something yesterday.
Yeah,
huh?
Scooter Jeanette, 4 home runs for the Cincinnati Reds yesterday. And I don't know if you saw this or not, Matt, but Jeff, he had texted me and posted, you know, we always have Jeff Klein on talking baseball, that he was one of the most unlikely players in the history of baseball to get 4 home runs. He only had 38 home runs going into the day. So about 9.5% of his career home runs came last night. And his isolated power is 144. And of the 17 guys in the history of baseball that have done that, there was only one guy who had a lower isolated power of 0.87. Then that guy, he did it back in 1894 for the Boston Bean Eaters, Bobby Lowe.
That's really going back. I'll tell you, the crazy part too was before that last home run, he had a chance for a home run cycle. He had the grand slam, he had the 2-run, and he had the solo shot. The only thing he was missing was a 3-run shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had an RBI single as well, so 10 RBI on the night. When asked after the game by Major League Baseball Network about it, Scooter Jeanette had this to say. He said, "Yeah, that was kind of surprising."
That's exactly what you want to hear from the guy that just hit 4 home runs, right?
Yeah, exactly. So good for you, Scooter Jeanette. I hope that you had him in your DraftKings Daily Fantasy League, Matt.
Oh, yeah. I think he had 71 points in DraftKings, which is pretty much unheard of. And I'll tell you what, playing in Cincinnati, I mean, if Scooter Jeanette can hit 4 home runs in Cincinnati, that's a ballpark you want to hit in, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, he was... There was, and 2 of them were kind of cheapies. There were 2 that the grand slam was legit, but he had an opposite field one. It was a bit of a wall scraper. The last one was a line drive, bit of a wall scraper. But hey, you know what? They all count the same on the board.
Absolutely.
Hey, you know, other unlikely scenarios in sport has played out this year in the NHL, and that is honky-tonk hockey in Nashville. We were a little worried about this Stanley Cup Finals after the first two games where Pittsburgh seemed to be outplayed but ended up leaving home with two wins. They went into Nashville, and it has been all Predators.
Yeah, and I mean, you brought up a good point there. Is that early on, especially in games one and two, it looked like Nashville was outplaying them. Yet Pittsburgh was the one coming up with big goals, and you know, one big period there in the third period in game two to kind of put them away. But yeah, Nashville bounced back in a big way, and the excitement down there, the energy down there in Nashville, I mean, it's something I haven't really seen before. I never really paid too much attention to the hockey scene down there. But, man, they're into it. They're playing well. I don't know if this is a series where it feels like, I mean, the home team's going to win every game, but I don't know. You think Nashville can steal a game from Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh?
Well, that is certainly going to be the question. The big difference between home and away has been with goaltender Pekka Rinne, who gave up 8 goals and 36 shots in those first two games. But he is 13-1 at home in his last 14. He's got a 94.5 save percentage, 1.5 goals against. He was really the difference maker in last game. There were a couple of odd man rushes that Pittsburgh got that he really sort of stood on his head. He did all the things that he needs to do to keep them involved. So that's going to be the great question. Can they steal a game on the road? Is Nick Bonino going to come back for Pittsburgh? The only thing that we are certain of is that Pekka Rinne right now is in the zone, and Carrie Underwood continues to be America's sweetheart.
She's almost the face of the franchise, unfortunately, for some of the players. But, yeah, like you said, Rene's really been in the zone. And I don't know if it's a difference between home and away. We'll have to see what he does in Pittsburgh. But he's been in the zone. The question is, what's going to happen with the goaltending with Pittsburgh? Because, you know, Andre Fleury, you know, kind of shined down the stretch there of the Eastern Conference, you know, of the finals there before they got to the Stanley Cup. And Murray was good at home, but he's kind of been a mess on the road. So what do they do there?
Yeah, Matt Murray, he's only got a 90.2 save percentage, given up over 3 goals a game. Last time we saw Marc-Andre Fleury, game 3 against Ottawa, he gave up 4 goals on 9 shots. We have not seen him since. But I think with Mike Sullivan, who's their head coach, that Matt Murray is his guy going forward. And I don't know that even if Marc-Andre Fleury were to come in and were to win 2 games and they were to win the Stanley Cup, I don't think Marc-Andre Fleury is there next year, that they're really committed to Matt Murray. So you're almost at the point of if there's not an injury, I don't think we're going to see Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like you said, I mean, if that's their guy, they know they're going to roll with him next year. I mean, there's no need to make a change now, but I mean, if he gives up another 3, 4, 5 goals, we'll see. But like I said, I think this series has really been kind of that home team plays well, goaltending plays well at home. So we'll have to see how it turns out.
Yeah, it should be a fun game tomorrow night. Another bit of news out of Indianapolis is that Andrew Luck, who had surgery on his throwing shoulder, has yet to start his throwing program. Chuck Pagano said, it's no big deal. He's our guy. We're going to go with the guys that we've got. We're not going to seek another free agent quarterback just in case. How worried are you if you're an Indianapolis Colts fan that he hasn't started his throwing program and you're looking at guys like Scott Tolzien as being your number one backup, Stephen Morris, Philip Walker?
Yeah, I'm very concerned. I mean, this Andrew Luck kind of stormed onto the scene. We knew, obviously, when they drafted him number one that he was going to be a big-time player. He showed up the first couple of years, you know, made all the plays. And then the last couple of years, it seems like he might have regressed a little bit. I know a lot of it had to do with the O-line, but a lot of it also had to do with the shoulder that they were talking about. Now he's not throwing. He has a surgery. I mean, I would be concerned because if that shoulder isn't right again, and especially because I don't think their offensive line really got upgraded too much, I mean, they could be in for a lot of hurt. And like you said, the backup situation is terrible, and the free agent quarterback market right now is not very good. I mean, can you imagine Colin Kaepernick ending up in Indianapolis?
Yeah, he's clearly the best available quarterback should they need to go that route. I think that they like Scott Tolzien better than anybody else who's ever seen football like Scott Tolzien, because they seem to always have some faith and belief in him. But like you said, that line, at least with the line, they are returning all five starters from last year. Three of the guys, their center and the entire right side, all rookies. So at least they have a little bit of a continuity should they need it. And they get the Rams at week one, so that helps.
That's all. I tell you what, though, this is a Wade Phillips Rams defense, so you better watch out. The luck better be healthy, because if there's one thing the Rams actually do pretty well is they rush the quarterback. So, yeah, if you're an Indy fan, you're definitely concerned right now, because the longer this drags out, and I know it's still early, and you know we're talking football in June, but you want your quarterback to be healthy going into the season, and this is obviously a big red flag.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that Frank Gore is another year older, and they brought in somebody to help him, and their second ahead of their two-headed monster is Christine Michaels. So, yikes, if you're Indy, you can't really throw the ball and you can't really run the ball. So hopefully they'll do well on special teams, Matt. I wanted to move out to New York City and to the Belmont, the third jewel of the Triple Crown. We will not have a Triple Crown winner this go-round. Kentucky Derby winner and the Preakness winner both going to skip the Belmont, yet still a pretty compelling race. Irish War Cry, the morning line favorite 7-2, now at 3-1.
Yeah, there was a big defection this morning. Classic Empire, who ran second in the Preakness, was thought to be the favorite, was going to be the favorite heading into the Belmont. He scratched today with a little foot abscess. So, yeah, Irish War Cry takes over the favorite role. Irish War Cry, you never know. He's run two great races, the race in Florida, Family Youth, and then winning the Wood. But he's also throwing in some clunkers, being the last one being the Kentucky Derby. So you never know what you're going to get with Irish War Cry. He should be out on the lead, I think. These mile-and-a-half races, people seem to think that you need a closer. Well, that's not always the case. It just depends on the early pace. So if he's able to slow it down enough on the front end and he's up to running one of his better races, I think he has a good look. For me, I'm looking to Gormley. Gormley won the San Diego Derby. He went into the Kentucky Derby, had a rough trip, and if you watched, he actually ran on pretty well. So you got Espinosa, you got Sheriffs, you got a horse that should be sitting right behind the leaders in a good tracking spot. So I think Gormley's got a big shot to run big. And if you're looking for a closer, Jay Boy's Echo, he got absolutely eliminated in the Kentucky Derby, kind of without a shot. Don't think he really enjoyed the slop. So you put him on a fast track, I think the mile and a half, no problem for him at all. So if they do go fast enough early and he gets something to run into, I think Jay Boy's Echo at 15-1 is a pretty live long shot.
Yeah, I like a little bit of Taprit, the number two horse, going off at 7-1. If you're into buyers, Meantime had the highest buyer of all the new shooters at a 91 in his second at the Peter Pan. But I want to know about this horse, and this is who I'm backing, because I don't know if you know this, Matt, but we have a horse in this field that was named after our own NBA insider, Stefan Filial. And that would be the number five horse, a 40-1, Hollywood Handsome.
Good old Hollywood Handsome. Yeah, he was a late addition. By Tapizar, a son of Tappet, who's probably the best sire out there right now. He's not without a look. Dallas Stewart is known as a long shot trainer. He's had some horses, get into the exact in the Kentucky Derby at 40-50-1. So this is a horse that, yeah, you never know. I think the Belmont, of all the races, I think we see more double digit odd winners of the Belmont than any other of the Triple Crown races. So, yeah. Stefan, I'll be putting a few bucks in on Stefan, Hollywood Handsome.
Right on. Well, we are going to have Stefan fill y'all, if you can ever stop laughing at us when we come up on the next segment. Matt, great to talk to you. I look forward to talking to you next week. Stefan fill y'all, Carlos Blackman coming up. Lots of basketball on the agenda. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. The Joe Fan Scoreboard is brought to you by Kazoom Adventures. For outdoor hikes that can win you money, visit radio.gokazoom.com for exclusive picture and video clues. Get outdoors, find flags, play Kazoom, the hottest new game in Vegas. Radio.gokazoom.com. Major League Baseball games in progress. Colorado Rockies at home up 4-0 on Cleveland. Charlie Blackmon has gone yard. The Dodgers 2-1. They're ahead of the Washington Nationals. Yasmani Grandal with an RBI double. And it is a 4-3 game in Oakland. Trevor Plouffe with a home run. Blue Jays on top in that one. Games later tonight, starting at 4 o'clock, the Red Sox are in the Bronx to face the Yankees. Rick Porcello and CC Sabathia. Up at 4, Pirates at the Orioles. Chad Kuhl versus Wade Miley. White Sox and the Rays. Mike Pelfrey and Jacob Fiera. Angels at the Tigers, Alex Meyer and Buck Farmer. Cardinals and Reds, Lance Lynn and Bronson Arroyo up at 4:30. Phillies and the Braves, Jared Eichhoff and Mike Fultonevich. Up at 5, the Marlins and the Cubs, Jose Urena and John Lackey. Mets at the Rangers, Zach Wheeler and Yu Darvish. Giants and Brewers, Ty Black and Jimmy Nelson. Astros at the Royals, Dallas Keuchel versus Jason Vargas. Down at 6:30, the Padres are in Phoenix to play the Diamondbacks, Luis Perdomo and Zach Greinke. And just one game from the West Coast at 7 o'clock, Twins at the Mariners, Alberto Mejia and Yovani Gallardo. And Game 3 of the NBA Finals from Cleveland gets underway at 6 p.m. as the Golden State Warriors look to remain perfect in the NBA postseason and go up 3-0 on the Cavaliers. And that is a look at your Joe Fan scoreboard. Well, welcome back to Las Vegas. Clayton Hamilton here. Going to invite my two friends in, talk a little basketball. Hollywood handsome himself, Stephon Phil, y'all. Welcome, Stephon.
You're killing me.
Yeah. It's true.
Oh,
your mother told me.
Oh, you're too much.
that you are a handsome lad, and I believe her. Also joining us from Jacksonville, Florida, here in the studio, Carlos Blackmon. Welcome, Carlos.
Thank you for having me, Clayton. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to today's show.
Yeah, we're going to talk an awful lot of basketball. We'll start here in the college ranks. We saw the Ohio State called themselves a press conference yesterday in order to let Thad Matta go. And it was really an odd bit of timing, Stephon, when you look at it, to fire your college coach this late into June. Recruiting is now a mess. You know, you got to worry about if our guy's going to pull out, who is still available to go out and get. We saw this play out with UNLV last year, where they went through a number of coaches. At least UNLV got it done in April. It's now June, and Ohio State has no head coach.
Yeah, they did. I still feel like UNLV is recovering, though, to be honest. And for it to be this late for Ohio State and a college with a basketball program that's so pristine, with the coach gone, this can only hurt them.
Yeah, and they had a lot of success, 337-123 with Coach Matta there. And Carlos, he had brought in a lot of guys who had some success at the next level. He got in D'Angelo Russell, Mike Conley. He had Daquan Cook there. Those guys all went high. You had Greg Oden, who was injured but was a number one pick. Jared Sullinger was there. So how did this unravel so fast?
Well, you know, in today's time, it's basically what have you done for me lately? And so you go through a series of not so successful seasons. Ohio State is a very prominent program. Their football program out by far represents the school. But still, the name Ohio State demands high expectations, and it's just unacceptable to not deliver on those expectations there. And thus he gets the boot.
You know what I think will help, though, once they get the coach, and you're talking about recruiting players, they're going to struggle this year.
Mm-hmm.
But following up on that, I think what will help is Silver, commissioner for the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
He's working towards putting more years
right
before they come out. And I think, I mean, you look at Michael Redd. He was one of their last guys out of there that played for 2 years. That mm-hmm. was really good. And so I think that's going to help them. I mean, D'Angelo Russell coming out early, I think that's started a trend.
Yeah, Mike Conley as well. I mean, it really goes back to Conley and Oden,
right,
too.
Right.
I mean, they lost Evan Turner as well. They lost a lot of guys at a very early time, which really sort of killed the recruiting. I think you're on something, and you're right, that they certainly are going to be atrocious mm-hmm. this year, but they do have a good enough brand that they can rebuild. The question is what do you do in terms of coaching. And we saw this at Ohio State before when the whole Jim Tressel thing on the football side happened, and they were without a coach. They went with Luke Fickell, who was their defensive coordinator, as an interim coach for a year. And then they went out and got Urban Meyer. Is that something that they can do? Because a lot of people are saying Fred Hoiberg. A lot of people are saying Billy Donovan. People are saying Mike Brown, some NBA guys.
Yeah, and you know, Chris Gent might be a nice placeholder for them. But I like the Fred Hoiberg idea. And I don't see Mike Brown going that way, just because of his rebirth, his resurgence of success with the Warriors. I think NBA teams are going to be looking at him again. If Fred Hoiberg is tired of Chicago and all their problems there, because even with Derrick Rose gone, they've still got problems.
And who knows if Jimmy Butler's going to be there for
how
long?
Who knows? He wants to. So he says, politically correct answer, but who knows? And so if he goes back to college, I could see Mike Brown going to the Bulls and coaching that team, which I feel like it's more of a chain reaction kind of thing.
Yeah, let's look at Billy Donovan, Carlos. You're from down in that neck of the woods, Jacksonville, not too far from Gainesville. Billy Donovan, tons of success, actually beat Ohio State in the national championship game.
That's right.
There's been some talk about him maybe not wanting to continue in Oklahoma City. One of the problems, though, he makes $6 million. Thad Matta made $3.5 million. The governor of Ohio, which is, you know, what everyone calls Urban Meyer, I mean, he is Mr. Everything in Ohio. He only makes $6.5 million. So they're not going to pay Billy Donovan the same as Urban Meyer. So what's going on with Billy Donovan and his happiness?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, Billy Donovan has had an outstanding career at the collegiate level. I think he's done a pretty decent job with the Thunder. I just don't see him leaving the Thunder just yet. For someone who's had the kind of success that he's had at the collegiate level, I feel that he's moved on from that and is now trying to build upon and establish himself at the professional level now.
You think KD would have any, like, KD leaving would have any impact on him, whether he's staying after having a year without Kevin Durant?
No, I don't. However, I think that if Russell Westbrook decides to leave, then we have a discussion.
Yeah, because he's got a lot of things. He's got a lot of things to figure out, but he is under contract. He is making $6 million,
right,
which gives you at least the freedom to sort of try and figure things out. We had talked a little bit at the beginning about how this was very similar to what happened at UNLV. UNLV right now is at a crossroads, and Marvin Menzies has done a terrific job in terms of rebuilding, going from absolutely nothing. He lost a lot of his players. He lost Poyser, and he lost Baxter and Morgan. They all left the program. He had guys that had, you know, decided to go into the draft early. We saw Patrick McCall do that and have some success. But he's got a really stellar recruiting class coming in. It looks like UNLV is going to be back, if not this year, certainly next year. New athletic director coming in with Desiree Reed-Francois. She's taking over at a critical time where they're trying to figure out what are they as a university with the football program potentially moving in with the Raiders. They have to figure out what the basketball program is. Where do you see UNLV, and what is her first mission in terms of figuring out what UNLV wants to be?
Well, I mean, when you're coming in as an athletic director and it's a big school like this, I mean, you're looking at money, first of all. And I feel like the go-getter would be to build up your football system, your football program, especially with all this NFL coming in preparation for the next 2 years and the stadium. I think that's where the money is for them. Basketball, I feel like right now it's already in motion. I feel like they're already making moves to get there. And if they're okay in UNLV, if they can make the tournament, that's a plus. You know what I mean? But if they can be okay and you can build your football program in preparation for everything that's coming, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, well, UNLV is weird because they have a rich basketball tradition.
History,
and,
right,
and not so much on the football side. But we have seen universities, Carlos, and this is Clayton Hamilton here with Carlos Blackman and Stefan Filio talking UNLV basketball. We have seen universities with a strong heritage just destroy their basketball program for football. That's what killed the Big East. Mm. We saw Syracuse do it. We saw Pitt do it. So if you're UNLV, do you want to be UConn or Cincinnati, where you are a good basketball program with an okay football program from time to time? Or do you want to pursue the Big 12 or the Pac-14 and become, in effect, Indiana or Wake Forest, where you're a good basketball program and completely irrelevant in football, but in a large conference?
Yeah, so I think that for UNLV, you want to hang on to what you have established already. So, you know, trying to be maybe a UConn, a team where you have a solid program and not so much on the football side of things, and you're okay with that. Having the Raiders in town, maybe you can use that as a marketing tool to recruit players to the city. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you have the Strip here, but also that's just another additive, I think, to maybe bring in some basketball talent alongside with the professional athletics that's going on here in the city as well.
So. Yeah, but I mean, we've had all that other recreational stuff before to entice recruiters. But I feel like the stadium and a pro team actually in the city, a small city, is big. And I feel like you should be bringing in talent and better recruiting. Look, UNLV's basketball, they, like you said, they've already got their history. They're already going in the right direction. Depending on what the rules are for NBA, if they change, if they have to stay two more years, three more years, or whatever, that's only going to help them. That's only going to help them build their program. That's set. They're good. I think they need to put more into football. I'm not saying totally ignore basketball, mm-hmm. because that's going to be where it is. I just think if they put more into football, it's just gonna propel them even more. And I mean, even basketball players like football,
right?
You know, that's not gonna hurt their recruiting chances. Mm-hmm. And with that comes the money, and you still get money to go around.
Yeah, it will be interesting because you know you see a school like Boise State, and Boise State has gone sort of the opposite direction where they put everything into the football program, and if basketball comes along or one of the other sports, you know that's fine. So it's going to be real interesting to watch what the new athletic director does. Does she decide to be UConn? Does she decide to be Boise State? Does she decide to be Indiana? So we will find out when we come back. Carlos and Stefan going to stick around. We've got a lot to talk about. NBA Finals, they get back underway this evening. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Patrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvbrc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, along with Stefan Filial and Carlos Blackman, who are all geeked up tonight for Game 3 of the NBA Finals. The scene shifts to Cleveland, and Stefan, we have read this script before. Cleveland goes game one and two, is completely uncompetitive, goes home and resets the series. Do you see that happening again?
Nah, there's a twist this time. We've seen this script before, but we got this little insert. Somebody made a cameo. That would be KD. I mean, he's the new star of the show now. And I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, as they say, the third installment of any franchise, never quite as good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it has been all Golden State. What has gone wrong for Cleveland?
Well, it seems like they haven't learned from years past. I mean, I don't understand. You know what? That's the most frustrating thing for me. I don't like either one of these teams this year, by the way. But the most frustrating thing for me is that LeBron James knows how to beat them, and he still doesn't do it. The two games that he won in the first installment of this series, he was on the block, mm-hmm. and they slowed the game down. Kyrie was out. They went straight to him pretty much every time. He pulled a Magic Johnson. He brought the ball up, went to the block. But last season, it was him, Kyrie. Kyrie was the anomaly. Like, he came out and came just just pretty much took the Warriors out of their game. Mm-hmm. Aside from Draymond Green getting suspended and et cetera, et cetera. This year, it's like they just totally forgot everything from the previous years. You got LeBron James trying to go one-on-one. You got Kyrie going one-on-one. You got Iman Shumpert going one-on-one. It's like, what are you guys doing? I don't understand. They have nobody that can really guard LeBron James on the block. And if he's surrounded by three-point shooters, go to the block. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to brainwash him with Magic Johnson video.
Right. So you say, we'll go to Carlos on this, do you put this on LeBron James for the team that he assembled around himself as general manager? Do you put it on Ty Lue for not making in-game adjustments? Do you put it on Kyrie Irving because he's the point guard?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great question. I don't want to put it on LeBron James because, I mean, he is a player on that team. He has a big part and a big role on that team. But it does come down to what has been assembled and the skill sets that they have. And they just flat out don't have enough skill sets to help them overcome the Golden State Warriors this season.
So, yeah. So you're saying LeBron doesn't know how to recruit?
Well, looking at the players that he's brought in, Deron Williams, game one, 19 minutes, no points. Kyle Korver, 20 minutes, no points.
They been off better off with Mo Williams and
yeah.
You kind of wish they never traded Andrew Wiggins, huh?
Yeah, at least Dela Dova.
Give him the money.
Yeah, he had a three pointer every now and again, but it's really, let's go back to what you talked about LeBron James and the block. And their inability to control the paint, which is what you sort of thought maybe that was what their chance was going to be. Tristan Thompson, complete no-show. He had no points in 22 minutes in game one, and he had 8 points in 21 minutes in game two, 4 rebounds in each game.
Well, I mean, there's only one answer to that, and that's Kardashian.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, it's the Kardashian curse. I mean, come on. It's every team, every player, come on. I mean, anyways, aside from that, Zaza's got a job to do. And if you watch the games, anytime Tristan Thompson's out of the game, Zaza's out of the game. Zaza's just headhunting for Tristan Thompson anytime a shot goes up. And he's doing a great job at it. And he's getting his own. Like, he's getting his own garbage points more than Tristan Thompson is. And I think that's thrown off Tristan a little bit. And he's not only not contributing, but he's not contributing because he's on the bench. Mm-hmm. And so I think, man, they're trying to control the paint in the wrong way, because LeBron James is he's getting to the paint, but he's wearing himself out.
Right.
And he's wearing himself out because he's forcing himself into the paint off of a pick and roll or a one-on-one play and trying to get to the line, and they're just letting them play. We'll see what happens when they get home court advantage. But right now, it's just not working, and he's trying to get other guys involved. I understand trying to get other guys involved in the first two games or so, but that's just not the way to do it.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I had mentioned skill sets earlier. I think that in this offseason coming up, Tristan Thompson needs to add some type of offensive prowess to his game, because that's really taking him out of the game, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, he's really in a tough situation because of the style that the Warriors play. They shoot long, and anytime you shoot long, you rebound long as well. So when you have long rebounds, now you open up the rebounding stat line to point guards, wingmans, as well as the centers, and so you end up having what Steph Curry had last game, in which he had a triple double. And one of the stat lines that he had the double figures in was in rebounds.
Yeah. If Steph Curry's has 10 rebounds with some of the guys and the big bodies that are in that paint, that's a problem.
But you see him, he's getting, even some of the ones that are inside the paint, he's getting in there and he's getting up for them. He's not dunking this series, but he's definitely going for those rebounds. And I ask you guys a question. If you put contract aside, do you trade Tristan Thompson this offseason?
Well, I think in order to do that, you have to figure out what is out there and available that you can bring in to replicate or replace or upgrade, and what's
not much there.
What's really out there in terms of your sort of more traditional big guy, and there's not a lot to look for in the draft.
Well, that's the point. Is like, do they need a traditional big guy, or do they need a modern big guy who can stretch the floor?
Right. Which I think Serge Ibaka would be a good replacement for Tristan Thompson.
Really? Even after what you think his performance in Toronto was good enough to be in Cleveland?
Well, he didn't have a great showing in Toronto, but you put him on a team with LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and he's going to flourish.
But we said the same thing about Kyle Korver, and we said, you know, well, let's put him on that team, and he'll do great. And Kyle Korver's been a huge disappointment.
That's because they've been running the pick and roll and taking tough shots. The Warriors are switching everything. I mean, everything. They don't care if it's a big on little. That's why they're so smart, because they switch and they'll switch back.
Right.
Their communication on defense is just so constant, and it becomes just reflex at some point, to where it's just communication by action, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're struggling to get off good shots because they're not working to their own advantage. They think Kyrie Irving is their advantage, which is not, because they're putting length on him, and and when they're going in pick and rolls and they're switching, it's another guy with length. It's not
right,
you know.
Yeah, you never feel like, even when the second you guys come in and you say, oh well, maybe here's the chance for Cleveland to make a run. Oh yeah, Andre Iguodala's in. Oh yeah, Livingston is in. Yeah. Oh yeah, they just scored again.
Yeah, and the point is like, there was a point in time when Steph Curry, I know everybody's seen the picture of him laying on his back with the towel over his face during the game. At that point, I said, if the Cavs can't make a run here, they're in deep trouble. And at that point, they were pretty close. Mm-hmm. But if they couldn't take the lead at that point, then they didn't really have a chance. Because, I mean, when he's out of the game, they still have about three starters in the game.
Right.
I mean, you see, they have a smaller bench, but they're easing guys in. Like Patrick McCall's coming in. Clark is coming in, putting in some good numbers and some great defense.
JaVale McGee, James Michael McAdoo making an appearance.
Oh, I can't stand McAboo-boo. But JaVale McGee, I mean, they don't have an answer for him, to be honest, to be completely honest, because his athleticism on the offensive.
Because Mozgov's out of town.
Yeah, hey, you guys can take him back. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, they do. When you start to think about what can they do? Like, how can Cleveland beat them? And you always sort of circle back to the same answer, that Golden State is the best chance at being their own worst enemy. Like, that is the way that you have to beat them. And we have seen this in the past, and I have always been a critical of Steph Curry, because I feel like there are times where he says to the rest of the world, I have to go get mine because I need my name to be in the highlight. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking right now at who's going to be the MVP of this series, do you see maybe Cleveland's hope is that Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green start to fight out in terms of the stat line of who's going to be the MVP, and they get a little selfish? We've seen them lose leads in the past, you know, losing a big one to Memphis comes to mind, that we've seen that in spurts in the game where a 10 or 15 or 20 point lead would go away when they fight for their own individual stats. Or are they beyond that in this series?
I think they're beyond that in this series. They, you know, last year they were up 3-1 and lost the championship. So I think that in it of itself is an ego check. And now that they find themselves back in the same predicament, 2-0 going back to Cleveland, and now they have Kevin Durant. I don't see them getting in each other's way to prevent them from getting a title this season.
Yeah, it's totally different from, you know, Steph Curry and Draymond and Klay fighting for stat line stuff, with Harrison Barnes being the fourth scorer,
right.
and you know, having KD there and him being the second. Draymond actually plays better away, so I expect him to have a big game in Cleveland, especially with what happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, KD is going to be KD. He's going to be the three and the four, showing length and speed and getting the ball out and pushing it himself. Whereas last year, it was mostly Draymond Green doing that.
Right.
And they've just got even more versatility this year. I think throughout this year, I believe you gave that game for an example. Memphis. I believe that's where the growing pains come, and they've learned to. How to share the ball and when to share the ball. There's still times when KD will take a shot and I'm like why are you doing that? Like, mm-hmm. That's the one pass shoot. But I mean, he's making it most of the time.
Yeah. So now if selfishness isn't going to get him, now if you're Cleveland, you're looking for red cards to the giblets.
Look, they turned him over 20 times and still lost by 20.
Yeah. Unbelievable. It's just, you have no hope, and that's the part that's kind of sad. Even when it was a 3-point game at halftime, you sort of sat there, and I remember texting Matt, and I'd said, "Well, this one's done. Like, you know that they're going to make the run in the third quarter. You know they're going to make the run at the beginning of the fourth, and then it's going to be garbage time at the end of the fourth. And it's 3-point game, and you're not excited about the second half. But I do want to ask a little bit. There's been lots of talk, Stefan, about, you know how I feel about overreaction. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. LeBron James, greatest player on the planet, right? Until he had a bad game against Boston and Kawhi Leonard went off in game one against Golden State. And then Kawhi Leonard became the greatest player on the planet, right? And then now Kevin Durant is the greatest player on the planet. So where do you stand? And will there be a new greatest player on the planet tonight?
No, especially not in this series. This is going to be KD. But I will say Popovich probably started that Kawhi Leonard one, even though he does do a lot for that team. And I feel like, I don't know, I've said this many times before, if you take LeBron James off of that team and you put another top small forward, power forward on that team, I mean, they're going to the finals still. A lot of people disagree with me on that. However, I mean, you look at Kawhi, he shoots better than LeBron. I mean, he can still pass, and I feel like he plays better defense.
Yeah, nice five-block game.
I mean, it's, KD, yeah, KD, yeah. Man, and it was so funny because I was watching with my family, and they're like, oh, yeah, KD doesn't play defense. And I'm like, what? No, this year he's shown everybody what, you know, the critics, what they've been missing. And so I don't know. Right now it's KD. I mean, tomorrow it could be next season, who knows who this is going to be. But Kawhi Leonard, I think he's in the discussion as one of the best players. LeBron James, I guess the league has deemed him the best player in the league, best player of all time because of stats. And I have a problem with that. For just going off real quick, he pads stats if nobody else notices. Like, when they're up 20, 30 so points, like, late in games, why is he in the game? Mm-hmm. Nobody's trying to take him out, you know, right. Because he's the face of the league. And then they say he's, you know, the best in the world or whatever. But then when it's times like this, he kind of folds.
Yeah, and he has had some you know, high-scoring games, but they, like you said, they don't seem to be impactful. And another guy without impactful points and in the first two games has been Kyrie Irving.
Yes.
Because you have waited for Kyrie Irving. Yep. And in the third quarter, when I said, you know what, before this game gets out of hand, somebody that's got to go point for point with Curry and is got to be Kyrie Irving. Yeah. And at the end of the day, you look at it and he's like, he's around 20 points or so, but they're not memorable. They're not impactful. Yeah. They didn't come at a time like they did in game seven last year, like they did against Boston.
Mm-hmm. And right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this time around, you got Kyrie and Steph who are both healthy, no excuses. This is the matchup that everybody's been wanting to see. Outside of Kevin Durant and LeBron James. If Kyrie Irving goes out in these finals, continuing with the efforts that he's made thus far, it's not going to be a good look for him coming back next season.
Well, part of the problem is Kyrie doesn't really have anybody. He doesn't have a KD to pass it to. LeBron James, if he's on the wing, if he's not at the block, excuse me, if he's not at the block and he's on the wing, I'm pretty sure I'd take KD taking that three-point shot over LeBron James.
Right.
And that's part of the problem is that they've got guys to guard KD. I mean, to guard Kyrie is switching, but they don't have anybody to guard Steph Curry. And most of the time, Steph Curry isn't guarding Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be a problem. And so the one-on-one matchup isn't really fair because Warriors just have better players.
Yeah, it really is. And what you had said, you know, in terms of what the options are, there's just such a difference when Curry drives and kicks it to Kevin Durant, because Kevin Durant, they said he might blow by you, he might shoot a three,
might pull up.
He might, right. When you kick to LeBron James, he's going to try and blow by you. Mm-hmm. You hope that he pulls up and takes the shot. Or you're going to go to Kyle Korver, who's never going to blow by
Kevin
you.
Kevin Love.
He's probably
the best game that game.
Well. Right, but you still – you're not as worried about whether Kevin Love's going to blow by you. You feel like you have a chance to collapse on him as opposed to anybody else. So it's just – they're just better. And as sad as that is, and as much as I would like to see the series get better, I don't feel any hope like I did last year, even when they got blown out and were coming home and thought, well, maybe there's a shot. And that was the 73-win team. And this team, you feel like you're beating on the bus.
Well, Harrison Barnes had a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. He missed way too many threes.
Yeah, so we will hope that we get a good effort tonight out of Cleveland. I have very little faith. When we come back, it is Q&A time. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. It's Q&A time. Remember, if you would like to send us a question, just email us to submissions@joefanshow.com or tweet us @JoeFanShow. Clayton Hamilton here with Stefan Filial and Carlos Blackman. Thomas in Las Vegas asks, what do you think is the best fit for Jeremy Maclin? Is it Buffalo or Baltimore? #upgrade on the outside.
You know what? Baltimore, man, send him to Flacco.
Yeah?
Send him over there. Yeah, why not? I mean, look, if you're coming in and you're a wide receiver, man, you want that spotlight and give it to him. A lot of those guys are prima donnas anyway. I mean, you got to give the guy the ball. And if he's the guy that he's throwing to and if Flacco's healthy, I think go ahead and send him over there.
Yeah. I would say Baltimore. I mean, Steve Smith just stepped down. They have another speedster and Mike Wallace, a part of that wide receiving core, but Flacco's got the arm to give it to him, sling it, go to Baltimore.
Yeah, I think Baltimore is further down the road towards being a playoff team, and a guy like Maclin can come in and help make Baltimore better. I don't know. He's not enough to make Buffalo any better. They're still going to be at the bottom looking up. So if I were him, I would go to Baltimore. Jay in Las Vegas asks, how do you like USA's chances versus Mexico on Sunday? #World Cup.
I mean, does that answer your question?
That is how you like them, huh?
Oh, man, I'm worried, man. If you're depending on Clint Dempsey, man. Oh,
hey, hat trick.
I know.
Hat trick Dempsey.
That's part of the. I know, but it's rare you're going to get games like that out of him. And
what are you talking about? He's like the highest scorer in the history of the U.S. men's national team.
Look, okay, you say that, but what are they doing this year right now? I mean, it's really scary. I mean, they went 6-0 against Honduras, and then I mean they tied the next two, and right now I mean they're playing. They have Trinidad, correct, and then Mexico Mexico. I mean, Bruce Arena is my man, is my coach. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, you can tell, I'm not a huge Clint Dempsey fan. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Donovan fan. I don't like how he handles it. But if he can keep his composure and if he can come through, then I think they have a really good chance. It's just rocky for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Team USA, going with the home team. Mexico, they got a pretty good team, but I'm going to stay optimistic and support Team USA.
Yeah, I think they're in trouble. They've never won at Stadia Azteca down there. I think if they can get a draw, that would be a good result, maybe a 1-1. But I think it's probably going to be super low scoring, and I think it's probably going to be a 1-0 loss. But Darlington Nagbe, he's the difference maker that wasn't around on the team last time. He's got so much speed coming from the midfield up the side, and so I feel like if they can get him the ball, he can at least get by Mexico's defenders. So
That's important.
Yeah. But the big key, like you said, is Trinidad and Tobago. They need to win that game. Those are points you cannot give away to somebody that's at the bottom of the table. We got time for one more. I got right real quick here. Daryl in Summerlin asked, which team needs to upgrade their starting rotation most? The Cardinals, the Orioles, or the Tigers? Hashtag outside looking in.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cardinals is the obvious answer, but I'm going to go ahead and go with the Tigers. I don't think they're using anybody. I feel like they need to upgrade it because they've only got one, I guess, semi-reliable pitcher. And I think that's trouble.
Yes, Kate Upton's husband, Justin Verlander.
Oh, goodness.
He is one heck of a pitcher. Carlos.
Yeah, I was going to say Tigers as well. Of these three teams, Team ERA, Tigers had the highest ERA.
I'm going to go with the Orioles because when Wade Miley and Alex Asher are your two best guys, you're in trouble. So upgrade there in Baltimore. For Matt Reed, Savon Filio, and Carlos Blackman, this has been Clayton Hamilton. You've been listening to the Joe Fan Show on NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. TC Martin, the doctor, is next. Game on.